Precious metals. Okay, the recent sell-off was driven by de-hedging, a strong U.S. dollar rebound, and expectations of a shallower Fed rate cut cycle. If the Fed skips a rate cut in December, this may subdue the gold price in the short term.
Welcome to the Morning Markets and Metals with Vince Lancey, where each morning Vince brings you the financial and precious metals news to get you ready for your day. And now, here's Vince.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Vince Lancey. It's Friday. Gold is strong. Silver is strong. And oil is weak. We're going to talk about world war creep. And do an oil and gold update in that context. From ANZ Bank, they have a periodic report out, and we're going to go through that for you all. But let's start with the markets. 10-year yields are down 3 at 439. The dollar is 107.62, up 59. The S&P 500 is 59.44, down 1. The VIX is 16.82. Down 4. Gold is 26.98, up 29. Silver is 31.28, up 50. Copper is 406, down almost a percentage point. WTI is 69.74, down 67. Natural gas is 308, down 10. Bitcoin, 98.876, got up to 99 and change last night. Ethereum is down a little bit. Palladium, down 13. Platinum, down 2. Gold, silver, lower. But not low at all, really, when you think about it. And grains are mixed, but not really interestingly. All right. So soy is 977, unchanged offered. Corn is 423, up a couple cents. And wheat is 566, unchanged. Okay, there's gold. There's silver. We're going to come back to that and how to interpret this in the context of the moving averages that I mentioned yesterday. And it's playing out. Here we go. Homepage, Trump 2.0, mercantile trade means weaker U.S. dollar and stronger gold. There's a zero hedge edit. Discussion, ANZ Bank on oil and gold. This is a risk management analysis, so we're going to do this, and let's get the facts out of the way so we can look forward to the markets. ANZ says geopolitical uncertainties are keeping oil prices volatile, and we add, but still net soft. High-frequency indicators show a bleak demand outlook with China's apparent oil consumption contracting by 4% year-to-date. A couple charts to that effect. Oil volatility spiked amid geopolitical tensions. Those charts may be small on your screen, but you can zoom in on them. Geopolitical uncertainties are keeping oil prices volatile, but still net soft. Now, on the left-hand side, they're just showing that oil prices are volatile in the short term. And on the right-hand side, they're saying that the backwardation, which is an indication of tightness at the physical level, is backing off. So there's less demand quickly for oil right now. And everything else about this report confirms that. And we'll get into that in a second. Next chart underneath there, China's oil demand continues to contract. Our high frequency indicators show a bleak demand outlook with China's demand dropping 4% or more. China's refining margins fell further. They're making less gasoline, diesel, heating oil. Gasoline's not a big thing out there, but diesel is. Diesel's more important anyway. China, apparent oil demand, apparent because we don't know, it's softer. Moving on to the next charts. This is where it starts getting more interesting. Inventories, withdrawal in oil products. So that basically says that U.S. oil demand is tracking well. So U.S. oil demand is fine, and that's a sign of the economy doing well. But I'll add a little color to it that you may not hear elsewhere. Oil processing is at a season high. So meaning right now they're cracking the oil and they're making heating oil. They're getting ready for the winter. So there's plenty of oil around, right? But now they're stocking up on heating oil. So the heating oil is being drained and being distributed. You know, people are coming around getting their tanks filled up. And so oil processing is at a season high. So it's kind of like inventory in, inventory out. And that's going to continue even if our winter is mild, I believe. If Europe's winter is harsh, our production will be sold there. Europe has become a consuming colony of our winter energy. Now, another example of that, an easier example to see is what I talked about the other day, natural gas. Natural gas is spiking because of the Russian war. Well, imagine if it's cold out there, okay? So, which brings us to natural gas. Gas supply disruptions meet winter heating demand. And there you have it, okay? Europe is, I'm sorry, I wrote this one, so this is not ANZ writing this. Sorry, guys. Europe is screwed if it's cold again, especially with any further delay in OPEC's plan to phase out its voluntary production agreements beyond December will be crucial for the market. Okay. So you get a cold snap in Europe. See, this is, I love this stuff. This is for Bryn, my oil maven, my energy maven. As the world starts pricing gold locally, so as gold becomes a local product, natural gas becomes an international product. So stepping out of the big picture stuff, natural gas used to be U.S. demand for U.S. weather, Europe demand for Europe weather. Now Europe can't get any from Russia, so they're getting it from the U.S. So if it's cold in Europe, our natural gas prices are going to go up. And if it's cold here, their natural gas prices are going to go up. It's like one weather zone now. It's just fascinating. LNG is a big reason for that. But in general, it's all because we blew up a pipeline. And when you blow up a pipeline, I don't know who we is. Sorry, don't come after me. When you blow up a pipeline and you make it impossible to heal your problems with Russia, not that they should be healed, but you make them dependent on us. And so American energy producers are going to make a shit ton of money again this winter if it's cold. So the trade, what's the trade? The trade is buy coal if it's going to be cold. I wouldn't know how to express that, but that's the trade because Europe is moving to coal. They have to. Next chart. Precious metals. Okay, the recent sell-off was driven by de-hedging, a strong U.S. dollar rebound, and expectations of a shallower Fed rate cut cycle. If the Fed skips a rate cut in December, this may subdue the gold price in the short term. Okay, that's very good. I don't know why they're calling it de-hedging. I think what they're saying is geopolitical risk. People were, you know, with the U.S. election, they're taking off their hedge because there was no end of the world. That's what they mean. I'm thinking about it. That has to be what they mean. Now, the strong U.S. dollar rebound and expectations of a shallower Fed cut cycle. Let's stay with the strong U.S. dollar rebound. That plays right into something that we've been saying here for 3 months, that the next move in gold, which had been higher, is contingent upon the election. But after that, you need the ETF demand in the U.S. to continue. And as much as the banks like Goldman and Citi and all the other banks are coming out saying, well, we have a new model for gold, and that new model is based on fundamentals, the catalyst is still U.S. rates. So U.S. investors don't care about Chinese bonds. They care about U.S. bonds. And at the higher prices, I don't think China and the other central banks were buying. And so we were the buyers. And as rates started to creep higher and the dollar started to strengthen without thinking about the war, right? Trump stuff, gold took it on the chin. Now, imagine if that's over. I don't know. So let's look at these charts, right? Gold price fell with rising U.S. Treasury yields. That's right. The gap is still very pronounced. See if I can make that bigger. It doesn't make it bigger. I'm going to stay with this. I want to stay with my pictures. Gold price fell with, right? So as the gap between yields, the correlation between U.S. yields and gold price still remains spread apart, and I believe it will remain spread apart for the foreseeable future. That's not to say the correlation is gone. It's just reset at a different beta, which we said before. And the renewed strength in the U.S. dollar also had an effect on gold post-election. I'm betting that the dollar is going to be weaker because of Trump and the other articles I wrote. But these are the short-term reasons or the manifestations of the post-election sell-off. Next. Oh, I'm sorry. There it is. I want to be on this one. Silver sinks alongside gold. The butt is my butt. China's silver imports are picking up. Now, we've seen this if you're on the if you're on X, if you're reading our stuff here. That's not very professional, is it? How about this one? If you're reading our stuff here, well, you know, the China silver demand has been picking up. Now, it's predominantly for industry. That's what China's saying, but I think it's for more than that. What kind of industry, we don't know. But anyway, China's buying silver again. So there you have it. So silver sinks because the Westerners were selling it. Which brings us to, oh, there you go, an overdue profit booking by investors. So here's a little bit of an explanation, liquidation of speculative positions. This is all the hedge funds getting out. The election's over, let's sell. And this was all the American normal people saying, oh, the dollar's stronger, let's sell. So there's your reasons, right? Physical demand, however, is coming back. So the lower the price goes, the more likely physical demand. I'm not referring to central bank demand. I'm referring to jewelry, seasonal, Diwali, you know, what have you, all the physical demand that includes investor demand, but not at the central bank level. So India's gold imports are climbing again. India's gold imports almost always climb when China's decline. There's a trade-off there. Gold spot discount narrowed in China. What does that mean? The price is narrowing, and that's a sign of physical demand returning at the public or retail level. Next, central banks continue to stockpile gold. Now, this is ostensibly a bullish statement. Central bank gold buying are strong. Okay. I've had worse typos. But it's lower. And everybody knows about the central bank demand if you're a big fund trader. And so the fact that it's declining is what's weighing on the market. The question is, will it come back again? And we'll find out it came back after gold's 300 higher. That's how it works. Now, the real downside risk they describe as the Fed may skip a rate cut in December. And the light blue area is the Fed rate cut. And as the light blue shrinks, the chance of a Fed rate cut in December is shrinking. That's what they're saying there. Dark blue is November. That's already happened. Now, I'm going to say that the real downside risk of a financial reason to sell gold, more Westerners saying, the Fed's not going to cut rates, let's sell our gold out, fine. Do you think China cares about Fed rates? They haven't for the last 2 years. So I'm saying if the Fed doesn't cut and I need to buy the gold because I want the gold because I'm creating an alternative currency system, which is going to be gold-based and silver, then I'm catching those selling, okay? Look, China's not the passenger in this car anymore. China's driving. News and analysis. So we have that full report at the bottom. Lots of nice charts in there. News and analysis. Trump 2.0 mercantile trade. We discussed that. Founders AM, German Goldman predatory vibe. Something that we see. To share this with you, we don't think Goldman is the bullion bank that's getting hurt. Let's put it that way. China finds $83 billion worth of gold reserves in Hunan. Finds is the key word there. Discovers, unearths. They already had it. They're just telling us about it now. Russian central banker in charge of digital payment system. Hold on 1 second. The Russian central banker that resigned in charge of digital payment system. I don't care how you frame it. That's not good, right? You need a stability in your organization. It's not good. I don't know what it means, but it's not good. Thursday, PM posts. Moving on. Those are our stories from yesterday. Politics, geopolitics, World War creep. Now, I'm going to read to you from RT, which is a Russian publication. So it's their flavor of the truth. And, you know, we have our own flavor, obviously. According to RT, I didn't mean to do that. I apologize. There we go. Kiev has launched a long-range missile strike against military facilities located within internationally recognized Russian territory, President Vladimir Putin said in a public address on Thursday. Ukrainian military fired British-made Storm Shadows. They're like cruise missiles. And U.S.-made HIMARS missiles, don't know what they are, at targets located in Russia's Bryansk and Kursk regions, he said. The use of such Western-made systems in the Ukraine conflict has drastically changed its nature, he warned. Quote, a regional Ukraine conflict instigated by the West has acquired elements of a global one, Putin stated. Side note, just a comment on the side there. He knows his international law. These long-range, high-precision missile systems cannot be used without the direct involvement of Western military specialists, the president explained. Quote, the use of such weapons by the enemy cannot affect the course of the situation in the special military operation zone, Putin stressed. He also said it was a big mistake for the U.S. to pull out of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Force Treaty in 2019. If nothing else, this guy understands how to talk to bureaucrats, coming from a bureaucratic nation himself. If you're not familiar with this lingo, we can sell them as many weapons as we want or give them as many weapons as they want. But if they need our technical expertise to press the button to fire them, well, then that's us firing the button. That's what he's saying. And that apparently is the international rules of engagement, you know? So it's okay to put American troops in so long as they're merchant army or, you know, hired army, private army. Now, there's a flip side to this. Everything he's saying is true, let's say. The missile they used to come back, I think they were hypersonic, I'm not sure. We accused them of them being ICBMs. And they said they weren't ICBMs. They were a special new missile that weren't ICBMs, but used similar technology. Let's be clear about this here. Who gives a shit whether it's an ICBM or not an ICBM? It's an ICBM shot locally. That's like saying I have a gun, you know, and I'm using a 45 caliber bullet in this gun versus that gun. It doesn't matter. Okay. This is world war creep. You know, about 6 months ago, about 2 years ago, I said this is the beginning of a world war. And I wasn't trying to be doomy or, you know, sensational about it. The point is, this is a slow moving world war. Remember all the BRICS, there's a battle in every region of the world. And this is a divorce, East and West. And every so often they're going to heat up. Well, this one is the kind of battle in a divorce, Ukraine being the thing that they're fighting over, that could cause people to go to court, you know, in the divorce. And that court is world war. The flip side, the hopeful side that I have is that this is like a balance of terror until Trump comes in. So Biden wants to make things miserable for Putin, and Putin wants to show he's not weak, because they're all looking at Trump stepping in, and the negotiation is when Trump steps in. And so now it's escalation of tension. And then afterwards, I hope. Now, I'm not hopeful based on how the markets are acting. So that's it. Data on deck, housing and talking premium. There is the ANZ report. Let's take a quick look at the markets as promised. So as a trader talking to people, trying to make sense of the market, gold's above the 50-day moving average. For all intents and purposes, it's just going to keep going up. Okay. So if you're bullish gold, what I say, if you're bullish gold, buy silver, but be patient. Well, the real answer is if you're bullish gold, you buy gold above the 50-day moving average, because you'll get the quick turnaround, right? So if you're bullish gold, buy silver means either buy silver now and hope for a gap, or during the day, during the trading day in the US hours, you buy silver, gets above the 50-day moving average. So my preference with silver would be to buy calls so you don't miss it if it gaps higher, and to some calls, not a lot. And then you watch the market during the day, and if it breaks the 50-day and gold looks strong, you buy silver, you know, with a vengeance. That's it, okay? They are they, right? They, not one person. The world is buying gold, and the world is selling copper, and silver stuck in the middle. That's what's going on. So we could be range bound in here, although I don't think so. I mean, we tracked the 50-day before. Maybe this was the aberration. We're just going to start skipping along on the 50-day again. That could be true. We'd probably have to go up here first and then go back down. I don't know. But I'll tell you this. As the Fed is being perceived as having less of a chance to cut, as the dollar is strengthening beyond the pale, gold's going up. Gold was bought at the 100-day moving average, not sold right below it. No one even got a chance to get short below it. That suggests to me that this buying was buying. I know this is buying by bullion banks in here. I know it based on how the open interest acted. This is shorts covering and funds covering, but it's mostly bullion banks, I believe, right? That part I believe, which says to me that there's a lot of buying underneath here. I think the BRICS banks might be buying again in here. It's crazy. They don't care about the price. We care about the price. They care about the value. That's it. Have a great weekend, and see you next week, God willing.
Well, thanks for watching this morning's Markets and Metals with Vince Lancey. We sure appreciate you tuning in and starting your day with us here. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you again next week. Please note that this video is not intended as legal, licensed financial trading advice and is to be used for informational purposes only. Please contact your financial advisor before making any decisions. And thanks for watching.